John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go. Yes, indeed. Friday get together. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here in Studio 4. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Looks like a lot of rain, John.
It certainly does. I thought you were good at preventing those sort of things.
Well, yes, but there's a time we need to wash the streets and to water the gardens and the parks.
So always an answer. Always an answer.
But it will be a Dominican Day parade on Sunday. It's going to be good weather. Saturday afternoon should be good. Forecast is for a lot of rain this afternoon, evening, and tomorrow morning.
And you have 20, or both New Jersey and New York have 25 iron triathletes running tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the sad thing at the moment, I don't know what's going to happen, but up in Westchester, they had to repair some part of their sewer system, so they dump a lot of sewage into the water. Whether or not it gets here, we'll find out later this afternoon.
You got the EPA.
We spent a fortune, and it could happen to us, too, incidentally. I don't mean to knock them. I'm glad it wasn't us, but that doesn't make it any better. It's certainly our water. So you got the
boys out in the boat checking the water.
They must do it that way.
I think they probably do.
You want to go out with them?
No, they probably don't
row out. I don't think so.
I
think it's a little more.
One of the most beautiful boats around these days, to get off topic here slightly, is that new fire boat that the fire department has. It's really extraordinary.
We have a couple of them.
Cool. You know. Big,
and people say, well, what do you need fireboats for? Number one is a lot of things on the water and also close to the water. And we have some small ones.
They're all different sizes.
Fire department's big. You don't realize how many different things. And it's like, to some extent, the police department. It's a different world in terms of, as is intelligence, the sanitation department. You have to train and understand to look for certain things that are dangerous and you didn't before. Nobody ever thought about that. But let's
talk about this new system. What is it called? Domain Awareness Surveillance System.
Yeah, it's a ways to have a computer pull together all of the different sources of information and make them not only accessible but accessible in a useful format. So, for example, there's a radiation detector goes off. Number one, have to have a radiation detector. Number two, chances are, most of the times the detectors go off, it's somebody that had some kind of an MRI, where you have a little bit of radiation in your body. Believe it or not, they're that sensitive. Yeah. I mean, like 0.001% of the thing, anything that would be dangerous, but they still go off. But then being able to find out where something was, Jessie Tisch, who's Merrill Tisch's daughter, actually works for the NYPD, and she gave a great presentation to the press as to how the police use this. There's a suspicious package, and if there's a suspicious package, number one, you want to notice it. And if somebody doesn't call, let's assume it was a bomb. You try to find it before it goes off. No guarantees, but improve the odds on doing that. And then you want to see who put it there. And if you want to identify it and see whether it is potentially something that the bomb squad's got to look at, you can look and see if somebody dropped it by accident, or they've been moving stuff back in and out of their apartment and they left that one there and they'll be back in 5 minutes. Being able to look at the cameras going back in time is useful.
Does the computer see that package, or the cameras see the package? The picture goes to the computers. Does the computer then highlight it?
Some cases you can. For example, if it's a confined space and it's a very high-quality camera, you can do that. For example, if you're going to look at, let's say you have a security guy, and he's got to look at lots of different cameras. Eventually, if nothing happens in the middle of the night, you go to sleep. So what you want to do is you don't show him every camera one after another. The computer should flash up those pictures where there's activity, somebody walking by or something like that. Same thing, you can look at it, the still life of, let's say, a subway platform, and the computer sees it and learns what it is. And then if it changes, i.e. if there's another object there, that would come up on the screen. You still need human beings to identify and to explain.
Evaluate.
Yeah, computers get better and better. License plate readers, for example, we now have lots of license plate readers. One of the reasons that car theft is way down, you're very likely to get caught. You steal a car, we got a very good chance of getting you very quickly. If we knew you were a terrorist heading for the city, very good chance. Or if you buy fireworks in Pennsylvania, where they don't allow the sale of fireworks to citizens of Pennsylvania because it's too dangerous, but they sell to out-of-staters. So, you know, you sit there in the parking lot of the fire works place, and you write down the numbers, you phone them in, we put them in the computer, you come across one of the bridges or tunnels, the computer is reading every license plate, bang, and you grab the guy. That saves, we used to have every 4th of July, 10, 23, kids in the hospital losing eyes and fingers and that sort of thing. And today it's down to a couple. 1 year, 2 years ago, I think we had nobody.
The point you made about car thefts, back in the 80s, I can remember, I mean, it was huge. Thousands of cars were being stolen.
Remember the club, that red thing you put across?
Sure, and you don't see them any longer.
I used to love the signs. People put a sign in their window, no radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody forgets that, you know.
It's a long way from that. Why don't I take a break right here? When we come back, we'll talk about another shooting of a cop, and it seems to be at least the papers are dubbing it the Summer of Guns. We'll get your reaction to that in just a moment. If you've got a question for Mayor Markle. Friday get together here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 18 minutes now after 8 o'clock, holding another press conference over shot cop again. Every week this summer, it seems.
Yeah, you know, I went to bed trying to get to, I was really tired, getting to bed at 10 o'clock, and I'm thinking, you know, I can sleep until 6, I won't run in the morning, I'll postpone it. And then at 11:30, the phone goes off, and when, you know, in my job, the phone goes off in the middle of the night, could be a wrong number, but more than you'd like, it's a serious thing. And so I, you know, throw on some clothes, head out to Jamaica Hospital. Jamaica Hospital, incidentally, is where in last December, Detective Peter Fogoski died, and he was killed with an illegal 9mm Ruger that had been bought in Virginia. There I am at, got to the hospital by about midnight, and there is a sergeant, Craig Beer, at the same hospital, shot with the same kind of gun, a 9mm Ruger. Also, the serial number says was sold in Virginia. Probably wow. Illegal because the perp that we're looking for has a criminal record, so he has no legal right to have a gun, and if he had a gun, it would be illegal. And I said, the good news is, this guy, sergeant is a big hulking guy, great shape.
Who was chasing after this guy?
Yeah, he was chasing after him, and you know he has a great spirit about him. I said, "You heard?" He said, "Only when I laugh," or something like that. And he'll be out of the hospital in a couple of days. One bullet went in and out through a leg, and maybe it went into the other leg, or maybe it was a separate bullet. But there's a bullet in the second leg as well. And you know he'll be out in a couple of days, and maybe he's out today. I don't know. But you know it could have been so much worse. He could have been dead. Could have been a kid shot. Could have been you. Could have been me.
This is the same story every week we talk about.
We just have to do something about guns on the streets of this country. In New York City, you are so much safer than you are in any other big city. But still, there's a risk. You know, we had Mayor's Night Out Against Crime, where Kelly and I go to all five boroughs and do a little talk in front of... you know, in a park, and you talk about how the police help and how the police need the help of the public to find things and report and all that sort of stuff. And there was a woman, Tiffany, I forget her last name, who was holding her 3-year-old. And I remembered Tiffany. I know her because I went to visit her and her son in the hospital. He is a 3-year-old where a bullet, probably just fragments of a bullet ricocheting off the cement, but he had two holes in his leg and has to have an operation, she said, to get one of the pieces of metal out. We just got to do something about this. This has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. You read the Second Amendment, it talks about a militia. This is not what we're doing here. And the elected officials are so afraid of not the NRA, they're afraid of not getting elected. Somehow or other, John, there's got to be something more important than getting elected. I mean, what about doing what's right? And I don't understand.
That's way down the list.
Well, that may be, but, you know, and I can't tell you that when, you know, you're an elected official, you always want the public to like you, and it's impossible not to be annoyed or hurt a little bit if there's a bad story in the paper or whatever, or somebody yells at you. Everybody's a human being. But there is time when you got to stand up and say, I happen to think this is the ways to get elected. This is the ways to break out of the pack, to stand up and say, you know, nobody's willing to do it. I don't care. I've got to do what's right. I've got to talk to my kids tomorrow and explain what I did today. I want them to be proud of me. This is what you got to do. And you can talk about the two presidential candidates, which I have. You can talk about the legislators on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. You can talk about the federal, state, and city throughout the country. You know, there are no, I saw the other day, Governor Cuomo said that he wanted, I haven't talked to him about it, but he wanted tougher gun laws. New York State already has the toughest gun laws in the country. So I think 3.5 maximum, a minimum jail sentence if you have a loaded illegal gun. The DAs tend not to let you plea down, and, you know, they say, look, it's the first time and whatever. But there are people. There was a football player, if you remember, who went to jail over it. But what we need in this state, increasing the penalty isn't going to – these guys, to some extent, going to jail is, or to prison is a sign, a badge of honor. We need micro-stamping. That's the one thing that the state should do.
That's with the bullet. That's with the ammunition.
Well, you look at the casing and you can tell which gun. And it's a way to connect. It's another tool for police to use to get bad guys and guns off the streets.
And what's the argument against that?
Nobody has a rational one. The subtext is the NRA doesn't like it, or some of my constituents might not like it, so I'm going to lose some votes over it. I think that it has passed in the Assembly and been stopped in the Senate in Albany every time. But whether it actually got that far, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. But conventional wisdom is that the Assembly would pass this if they haven't, and that the Senate would not and hasn't. But I would urge the governor to focus on micro-stamping, because just adding to the penalties is just, everybody feels good, but it doesn't.
But again, adding to, I talked with Michael Gennaris, the state senator, about this as well, and he's going to put some bills forward along gun control, closing loopholes and this, that, the other thing. But it's back to the out-of-state laws, the federal laws.
Gennaris' heart is in the right place. But with the exception of micro-stamping, I don't think there's anything else that Albany can do to help us. Now, I don't know whether they can provide some help to other counties around the state. In New York City, we tax ourselves and spend $8.5 billion on our police department every year. We are as aggressive as we can be within the law. Some people don't like it, but... more and more, we just have to keep. You've got to have the kids who want to carry guns thinking that they're likely to get stopped and arrested, so they don't carry guns. Reasoning with them, having another baseball program, that's not really terribly productive. Improving education, couldn't agree more. Nobody's fought for education more than I, but that's a long-term thing. And the kids generally who you catch with guns, it isn't. They just haven't fallen off the bus a little bit. It's a big fall. These are kids who have dropped out of school, and lots of them have records in and out of the system. That's why we started this Young Men's Initiative. And one of the things I'm most proud of in the last 10 years, we've reduced the number of murders dramatically. We're going to have another record this year, I hope. 7 months into the year, we're ahead of each year. But we've also reduced the number of kids that we send to jail. And there are some kids who are just bad kids. They're dangerous to people, and they should be in jail. And then there are some where you could find alternate ways to deal with them. If you send them to jail, they learn how to be more hardened criminals. So it may make you feel good. I'm going to get that kid. I'm going to send him to jail. Yeah, but then someday he's going to get out, and it's going to be a bigger problem. Why don't you work with the kid? And they say, well, you know, you're a bleeding heart liberal. No, there's a practical ways to do this, and some things work and some don't. If they don't work, stop the program, although in government, as you know, stopping any program is hard because the people that work there, and they go rushing to the legislators, oh, we get some value, you have to keep funding it. And we fund everything, which means you never have enough money for those things that really do work. But we're trying to work with kids who have made their first mistake and keep them from making their second mistake. By the time they get to their nth mistake, they're going to the slammer, and that's probably the right thing to do, and everything else seems hopeless with them.
You are working as hard as anybody can on this whole gun issue and talking about all of the factors that we've just touched on very briefly here. But as you say, when you talk with the President of the United States, when you talk with Mitt Romney, when you talk with the governor, I know everybody gives you lip service, would be my guess.
I think it doesn't even quite get that far.
It doesn't even get that far. They just glaze over and...
Yeah, it's... Conventional wisdom is that every time a national figure has stood up and tried to fight the battle, they've lost the next election or had a very tough next election that they wouldn't have. And number one, I'm not sure that's true. And my political analysis, and I should leave it to the pundits, but, you know, 40-odd percent are going to vote for Barack Obama no matter what, and 40-odd percent are going to vote for Mitt Romney no matter what. And the whole battle is for that 20% in the middle. And those are people who aren't dogmatic. They don't automatically have an opinion. They think about it. And I think the ways to get a majority of them would be to stand up and say, look, I'm not going to be president of the United States and have 48,000 people killed, murdered with illegal guns in the next 4 years in my term. Just not going to do that. And here's what I'll do. Now, Congress may not pass it, but I'm going to work as hard as I can. This is where I stand. And I think that's the ways that they would get a majority of that 20%, which is what they need to win. It's a very small number of people who are going to decide this election. It's in a few states, and it's people who are independent. You know, they say, well, you'll have more turnout, less turnout. That's not true. That doesn't really happen. There are people who are automatically on one side, automatically on the other, the hearts and minds of the middle, and those are people who you can approach. And I just... And incidentally, as I said before, if you lose, you lose. What is it? Can you really want to say, me getting this job is more important than saving lives? Now, where'd you learn that? In Civics 101, 102, not the one I took.
But you know, Mr. Mayor, that they're going to tell you, Bloomberg, you're being naive, or it's easy for you to say kind of thing.
Well, I'd like to think that we've done what's right every time. You know, another nanny gate story in the newspapers I don't need. But life expectancy is 3 years greater in New York City than in the country as a whole, all in the last 10 years. We really have made a difference. And, you know, when I went around this night out against crime, awful lot of thumbs up. An awful lot of people said thank you, you know, for doing the guns. And these were people whose kids were the ones getting killed. And incidentally, whose kids, some of the kids, were the perpetrators. You know, there's no sugarcoating it. We have too many kids out on the streets that are bad. Maybe we can save some of them, and that's what we should try. But there's no question, not everybody's perfect, and some kids are bad kids. You just got to protect everybody. We got to work with those kids, but the first thing is get guns off the streets.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take another break here. 800-321-710-WOR. Michael Bloomberg is here. We're looking for your questions a little bit later on. 800-321-0710. 9/11 Museum, if you've been down there during the day, is packed. 4 million visitors.
4 million visitors so far.
Fantastic.
It is, you know, one... It does not seem to be slowing down. You know, I've never worried about how we're going to pay for upkeep and security and that sort of thing. It would be great if we can get $20 million, which is a year, which is what we've asked for from Congress, because they give a similar amount of money to other similar museums around the country. So
you're talking about the museum now. And
the museum and the plaza, right, the whole thing. Right. And so, you know, we're not asking for anything that everybody else isn't getting already. That would make it easier. You wouldn't have to raise as much money. We have a fundraiser coming up in another month, which is sold out. But we're going to have to deliver the museum part of it, which is still held up.
No work.
Nothing's going on. And our fundraising, it is getting harder to raise money. People, when we talk to them and try to solicit gifts, well, you know, what's going to happen with the Port Authority Museum? And we are working with them and hopefully can come up with a solution quickly.
I thought there had been a solution arrived at.
Well, I think people, I don't know what anybody's willing to say publicly, there is no economic argument here. When we stopped construction on the museum, we were on budget, on schedule. The Port Authority has some obligations. We have some obligations. There was a disagreement about $15 million, I think, the last time I tuned in, which on a $600-700 million project is a rounding error. The museum, the foundation, has put virtually all the money that we're required into it already. So we've already paid our part. The port has some, and the port, it's a tough place to run. They've got lots of things to do, and they're trying to rent space in a down market. And so I'm sympathetic to all of that. But that's really, they've got to work out their problems. And there's every sign that this is going to, for a long, long time, be a place where people want to come, families want to grieve, remember their loved ones, where we want to teach our kids about America and the freedoms that we have to fight and sometimes die for to protect. If you told me that there would be a disagreement about something as pure and simple as this, the bottom line is America has some freedoms that lots of people in the rest of the world don't. People in the rest of the world, some of them wanted to take it away from us. 3,000 people died, 343 firefighters, 20, 30 cops, Port Authority cops. It's a shame we can't get together, but we're working and everybody's in good faith trying to get it done.
Early this morning, because we were talking about this when we started off this morning in the 6 o'clock hour, and Mike Figliola, my producer, asked the question, do you think that we will always have to worry about security?
Yes.
From this point, I mean, well, security is always, but I mean, the kind of security that we're talking
John,
about
the country
here
was formed 235 odd years ago. We've always had to have an army. We've always had to fight security. Israel, from the day the country was formed, has always had to worry about people trying to destroy it. Our freedoms, the freedom to speak and practice your religion and all this sort of stuff, those are freedoms that a very large percentage of the world do not have. And I think here we forget just how fragile our freedoms are. And we sometimes think that, it happens magically that we have these freedoms. It does not. It requires young men and women to volunteer to work in our police department, fire department, that kind of thing, to work in our military overseas, to devote themselves to organizations that try to help people around the world. Lots of different ways you can make a difference. But we've got to keep working. And I don't think there's any reason to think, if you read history, there's always been bad guys and bad women. And we're going to have to keep doing it. And if we let our guard down, the World Trade Center, there was a bomb that went off in 93. We didn't learn anything
from
it.
Eight years later, we have
3,000 people killed. It's very easy to sit back and say, well, we don't want to... antagonize anybody, or we don't want to be heavy-handed. We have a Constitution. We should obey the Constitution. But the Constitution, as interpreted by the courts, which is their job, says you can, for example, have reasonable restrictions on guns, like you can have reasonable restrictions on freedom of speech. You can't get up into a crowded theater and as a joke and yell fire. There are reasonable things that you can do. We're going to, for the foreseeable future, always have to have an army. There are always going to be countries overseas that hate us and don't give their people freedoms. And You know, it's a dangerous world out there.
Different subject completely. City Council looking for a law that states that businesses have to give sick days to employees.
You know, it's most people work for bigger companies that have it already. Small businesses just can't have it, period. They just can't afford it. They will have fewer employees. I love it. The city council bills always propose, well, less than X number of employees, you don't have to do it. So what's the employer going to do? Fire a couple of people so they get below
it?
Gets
underneath the
yeah,
cap.
Or just, you know, commit, just do it without telling anybody. It's just, it is, the economy can't stand it. It would be great if every job merited, would in an economic sense justify higher pay and more benefits. There are lots of jobs that just don't. And you want those jobs or don't you? And this is hardly a time in New York City, in the state, in the country, in the world, where we want to find reasons to hurt businesses and keep people from starting new businesses. And that's exactly what we need.
There are two people that want to be mayor of New York. At least they've stated such, Bill Thompson and John Liu. In the last campaigns, they put up posters on lampposts and other city property, and there is a fine for that when you do it, and they have refused to pay.
Well, I love the controller. He has said he wants to, he's opposed to a contract that we're trying to enter into where we would get revenues from people advertising on phone kiosks. And his reason is that the company owes the city $86,000. It's out of a lot of money, and maybe there's an argument about it, whatever. He owes $500,000. It's a little bit pot calling the kettle kind of thing, or glass houses kind of thing. Bill Thompson, I saw, got another $500,000 from the campaign finance. That's your money, my money, his money. It's everybody's money. He should use it to pay the fines. You know, every campaign is the same thing. Everybody knows they can't put them up. They put them up, and then they fight when they get fined. You can't put campaign posters on public property.
But you know,
and they just go ahead and do it, and they say, oh, I didn't know. What do you mean you didn't know? You got 100,000 of them up there. Come on.
Matching funds.
And incidentally, I think my campaign did once or twice, and we had to pay fines. We paid it.
Matching funds being spent to pay off a fine, I'm sorry, that doesn't compute with me.
Would you rather he didn't pay the fine?
Well, no.
Okay, fine.
But
so,
that's,
you know,
but
they're two separate things.
That's
here.
City money that's being paid back to city to the
well,
city.
It's better than city money that goes to elsewhere.
You. I understand the math, but
you know, that city money could be used to put up more posters in the next campaign.
Oh my goodness! And talking about this.
The stand-up guy here is Bill de Blasio.
Yeah,
I don't agree
paid.
With Bill de Blasio.
Yeah.
He said I made a mistake and I with my fine I paid it.
Yeah,
he paid it.
Bit the bullet and paid the
yeah.
paid the
That's the
check.
Right thing to do, and you know, that's the, you know, he has my respect for it, I'll tell you that.
Pedicab gouging, are they going to be
you know, I got to look at it. If somebody turns to you and says $400 for a 3-block ride, maybe you should say stick it.
Call a cop.
Call a cop. we'd have to take a look at it. I think it's not a regulated thing in that they have to they set their own rates. I thought that there was a requirement that they put them up on a sign, but there should be if there isn't.
Okay.
We'll look at it.
Pedicabs. I wonder, do they still have the octopus?
I know. I haven't seen that.
Cabs.
I think that was dangerous.
You think that went away?
Yeah, I think it was dangerous. But pedicabs, you know, all of the Sturman, drunk, whatever that term is, all the craziness about pedicabs that were going to destroy the city and that sort of thing. They didn't destroy the city. People use them. The number is whatever the market will bear, which is the way we should let decide on the right number. And, you know, it's each one of these things, it was going to be the end of the world, and then nobody remembers the fights, and everybody's used to it, and everybody thinks it's fine.
Other than you're speaking out as you do about things national, like the gun conversation that we had, are you going to be involved in either convention or either campaign?
No.
No,
I don't know what I'm going to do about endorsement, but I'm not going to work. I've got a job here. I've got to work for the people of New York City and represent their interests. I don't think either candidate yet has represented New York and what we really care about, like getting guns off the streets. I mean, if, you know, guns are one of the most important things in this city. You just have to be able to be safe walking down the street. And neither candidate has come up with a plan. You can agree or disagree with their plan, but at very minimum, they have an obligation, it seems to me, to have a plan. And so far, I haven't heard it, so I'm still looking.
And you haven't heard anything but accusations, truthful and suspect. In all of this, do you think we get to a better place before November?
Well, it depends what industry you're in. If you are in the selling inches and minutes, this is a boom time. These people are spending absolute fortunes on advertisements, and the industry of advertising business is phenomenal. Does it work? I would guess that by now most people are so tired of these ads, and we don't see them here because all the ads are in the handful of swing states. But after you get 50 ads a day, they're wasting their money. They really are. But the media business loves it, and the media writes bad things. This is a waste, all this money. It's an outrage they spend this, and then they raise their rates.
All right. Tell me about the economic cliff that everybody talks about. How concerned are you about the fact that nothing has come out of Congress?
Well, in the end, we're not going to jump over it. I mean, in the end, there's always a chance that we play chicken and we don't turn away. But chances are you will solve the problem. There is the deficit ceiling. There is the sequestering. The way the deficit ceiling was raised last time was there was an agreement that they'd raise the ceiling, but in another year we would stop spending everything and it would be so painful we'd have to address the issue.
That's what we are running up against.
Yeah, well, what they'll do is just pass a bill to postpone it for 6 months, saying, well, a next president, whether it's the current one or a new one, have to give them time. So that's the deficit ceiling, they'll do that. Same thing, true. And the trickier one is the third leg is the what's called the Bush-era tax cuts. And it's fascinating. Generally, you have to affirmatively pass a bill to change something. And you have to have a majority, and then you have to have two-thirds to override a veto if there is one by the president. Similar kind of thing at state and city level. This case, the tax cuts expire if nothing is done. So a very small number, 41% of the Senate, if you could get that, if the president, which he could do in a second, I think, he could stop the end of the tax cuts.
Of course.
Or he could force the tax cuts to go away. Okay? So that everybody's taxes would go up. And he can do that just by saying, I'll veto any bill where you try to continue the tax cuts. What is the argument? Well, everybody in Congress wants to continue the tax cuts for their constituents. So the Democrats say, well, for the middle class only, not for the rich. The Republicans say that's class warfare for everybody. I personally think we should not be dividing this country. The amount of money that the rich pay, because they may be very wealthy, but there's a small number. They are a very small part of the total tax revenue stream for the federal government. The only reason to not include the rich in there is just to be punitive. It doesn't give you a lot of money. You may argue, well, they have too much. I think we should take away money from everybody that's rich. If you believe that, okay, this is a ways to do it. But don't say that you're doing it to balance the budget, because it really doesn't have anything to do with it. I think the numbers are something like, if all the Bush-era tax cuts ended, you would generate $4 trillion over the next 10 years, which would be halfway towards balancing the budget. There's an $8 trillion deficit after 10 years. If you just kept the taxes, lowered the tax, raise the taxes for the rich, it generates something like $300 billion instead of $4 trillion. It's a de minimis amount of money. That's not the argument to do it. There are other arguments you might, if you believe in redistribution of wealth. And
so you think that you think personally, if you were in charge, you would let them expire?
I've given this talk a number of times. I've given a talk in Washington. I wrote op-ed pieces. The country's problem is, more than anything, a lack of confidence in Washington being able to address the issues. We should balance the budget by letting all of the Bush-era tax cuts expire for everybody. Our personal income taxes in this country are low by international standards. On the other hand, our business taxes are high by international standards. And so if you really want to improve the economy, you would lower taxes on businesses, raise them a little bit on the public to balance the budget, adopt the Simpson Bowl cuts, which are not perfect, and I would like to see some of them change, but it's at least a plan that was done based on some real thought, and that would balance the budget, and that would give people confidence to make loans, to take loans, to start businesses, to buy a new house, to change jobs, to do all of the things. And the de minimis amount of money that extra taxes, I know it's politically maybe suicide, but it would not change anybody. Nobody is not buying a new house because of the tax rate. Nobody is not going on vacation because of a little bit of the taxes. It would be a couple percent kind of thing. But it would set the country up for, unlike the rest of the world, and we're going to have some real problems here. I don't know if you saw this morning, China's exports have plummeted because they sell to the rest of the world. And so they've got real economic problems. And to the extent that their economy slows down, where do you think New York, our manufacturing business is doing well. A lot of the stuff we sell in from America, we sell there. We're all tied together, and we've got to do something about it. And this is what the president could do.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We've got some folks on the phone we're going to talk to in just a second when we come right back. Second here, what do you got going on the 14th?
Immigration. I'm going to do a forum up in Boston and in Chicago. I think we start in Chicago. Bill Daley, former chief of staff to President Obama and brother of Richie Daley, who was the mayor for 22 odd years and son of the previous mayor to that, or I think it was somebody in between, another 20 odd year old mayor. But Andrea Mitchell is going to moderate a panel on immigration, and then we're going to go to Boston, and Rupert Murdoch and I will do the similar kind of thing. Gerald Seib of the Wall Street Journal is going to moderate that, but it's to try to get attention and make people understand that immigration is, we're committing national suicide. I was with the president, former president of a major university here yesterday, and we talked about it. We educate people, we give the best and the brightest PhDs, and they don't have a green card, so they go overseas and they go to a university, making those universities compete with our universities. This is insanity. And they go overseas and they start businesses which create jobs overseas when we need those jobs here. This is insanity. Stop me when you get bored. We need people to create jobs here.
All right. Pick up your headphones there, Mr. Mayor, and listen in to Louisa in Queens. Hello, Louisa.
Good morning, Mr. Gambling, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about the state of the subway, specifically 53rd Street and Lexington Avenue. I went to school on 57 and had been in the city in a while and went through that subway station. It is a disaster. I don't think it's been cleaned prior to when I graduated in the 1980s.
Well, probably has since then.
At least once.
You know, I'll take a look at it. I'll actually call Joe Loda for you. Joe is the guy who runs the MTA. He's doing a great job. It is, you know, what happens is people bring a lot of stuff in and they throw it on the ground. They eat and sit on the bench and leave food around and that sort of thing. Long time since I think I've been in the 53rd Street on the Lex, because I tend to take the express down the Lex, subway all the way downtown. But I'll mention it to Joe, and I'm sure he'll have somebody take a look at it. It is annoying when I get in the express stations on the subway, and you see stuff on the floor and that sort of thing. You know, if there's one piece of paper or something, and same thing in the streets, I pick it up and throw it in the corner wastebasket. In all fairness, if the place is covered, no, because you just can't sit there and, you know,
pick everything up.
But we got to keep our subways great, clean, and couldn't agree more. And welcome back to New York.
All right, Steven's next out in Long Island. Go ahead, Steve.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'd like to make an observation and ask the mayor a question. It would appear to me that in lieu of stop and frisk, this new facial recognition technology would actually be a lot more effective because it would cast a much larger net. And my question to the mayor is, if this new program is successful in the security world, keeping New York secure, would you extend this this technology to other programs such as fraud prevention? In the case of people, I know a few months back they were looking to fingerprint food stamp recipients, and there was a big backlash. Would this be applied to those types of programs?
Well, we've been fingerprinting for a long time. It's brought crime down, or fraud down. People are double dipping, triple dipping. I think New York City is the only place that still does it. The governor has taken away, signed an order, I think, that we cannot do it any longer. We have to file some papers to explain to him why that's a bad idea. Probably we will lose the right, in which case we're going to have to hire a whole bunch of people to investigate every single person, because we're just not going to give anybody food stamps without making sure that they qualify. And people say, well, you know, that's a very small amount of fraud. Look, any fraud is bad. And in the case of this, the reason we have a lot lower crime in the city in social welfare things is because we do fingerprint. And we fingerprint anybody that goes to work for New York City. So if you get a benefit from New York City, I don't know why anybody thinks that we shouldn't be checking. All it is if you're doing it right, fine. And if you don't, you don't. Anyways, the facial recognition stuff is a long ways, I think, still, you know, long ways in technology terms, maybe a couple of years. But it is nowhere near working where you can just point a camera on the sidewalk and have a database show you of every person walking by. Also, you have to have people's names in the database. And one of the problems, stop and frisk, we don't know. You know, everybody that
who
we stop.
Are.
Yeah, I mean, there are those that, I guess, have criminal records. You would know them, but you don't have it for others. And so it's not
experimenting with the facial recognition for the airlines, for the TSA
right,
security,
right.
But that's a confined area.
Yeah, and you still have to know, you have to have in your database the bad guy. And the first time they're a bad guy, they're not in the database. And that's when maybe they can do more damage.
Got to go, Mr. Mayor. We'll
All
see
the best.
You next
see
week.
You next week.
All right. Thank you very much, as always. Lots to.